This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
Episode 364, Ronnie Dunn from Brooks & Dunn, the lead singer of Brooks & Dunn. Also, solo artist, new album, 100 Proof Neon, it's his fifth solo album. And we will talk about all of that. This is the rare time we record the intro before we do the interview.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, be sure to listen for this, be sure to listen for that. But I've had Ronnie on the radio show a few times. The great thing about this, what I'm looking forward to the most about this interview you're about to hear and that we're about to do, is that we just haven't really been able to sit with him and just have room and really dive in. And, you know, on the radio, we have 8 minutes or 12 minutes, and we got to keep it moving pretty fast, and it's got to be super interesting. And this is super interesting, but we can let things develop. And so I think that's why I'm most excited about this and Ronnie coming over. And it's also cool because when I have somebody that I know in my real life and they come in to do the show, I have the liberty to ask things I would never just ask if we were hanging out. Does that make sense, Mike?
That does make sense.
Because if I'm asking, hanging out, then it's like, can we just be normal humans? But if I ask here, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah, you can't get very specific sometimes in normal conversation.
Right. So, Ronnie Dunn from Brooks & Dunn, episode 364. I'm going to ask him in the interview at some point and remind me of this. Of all of his and their accolades, like, what's his favorite professionally? I'm going to guess that he may say, like, Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Oh, not a Grammy?
I'm going to guess Songwriters Hall of Fame or Country Music Hall of Fame, more than a Grammy.
I'll go Grammy.
Okay. Winner wins 1,000 paper wads.
Okay, cool.
All right, cool. Okay, Ronnie Dunn, Brooks & Dunn, please enjoy. Share this on your Instagram story if you don't mind, if you liked it. We need organic sharing because we don't have any budget for us to be shared. So check it out. Also, check out Movie Mike's movie podcast. You can check out my sports show as well that is called 25 Whistles. Mike is the executive producer of that show. All right, that's what's up. Here is Ronnie Dunn from Brooks & Dunn.
What are you doing? This house is like, it's like Disney World.
In what way?
Golf simulators, whatever. And here's a crazy thing. You get to put all your posters and stuff of like what you do on the wall. I don't.
Well, this is a different house.
This is?
Yes. Yeah, so we live right there, the same property.
Uh-huh.
But this is kind of the workhouse, radio,
okay.
TV. And but Caitlin also tells me all the time, there's too much of my face when you walk in.
Yeah.
Which you just alluded to. I didn't even ask you.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's so much of you. I take that as not a compliment.
Well, that's cool. So I had the barn, you know, at my house, which was like a quarter mile behind the house. So it's like Janine goes, no, you take
a quarter mile back there.
Yeah, take all your trinkets and all your stuff and all your bowling trophies that you won over the years, and you put them back there. And how about we just have a real live person, real people house?
And that's what we have now.
Yeah.
I had my mirror ball in the living room for a long time.
Well, of course.
That one's not anymore. That's not.
Who doesn't have a mirror ball? Okay, I had a mirrored steer head. From a tour, like 8 feet tall.
That you guys made for the tour?
Yeah, and then I got that's a small one, but like there were massive things in there. But they would come down from the ceilings in the arenas. We'd do neon moon. They'd hit them with blue spotlights, and it would just disco the whole place.
So you kept the 8-foot one.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the bigger ones?
It's in the warehouse. I've got a warehouse.
But what are you going to do with all that stuff?
I don't know. I mean, I should have already done something with it. But I have to go through every now and then and just order a dumpster for real. Or we'll auction it off. You know,
yeah,
for charity stuff. People are always asking for things to sign. And I'll do things like that with it. But
what do you do with a 20-foot disco ball steer head?
Still trying to figure that out.
Because it's not like you can charity that one away and mail it.
Mm-mm. No. And two, there's a cool story about making it. We got this bid back from a production company years ago when we were doing all that stuff. You know, Garth is doing all his crazy stuff. Reba's dropping from ceilings and all that kind of stuff. So you had to do something, you know, phenomenal, weird, or odd.
And you're paying rent for all that right now, right?
No. No, I own the building.
Oh, you own the – oh, that must be nice.
Yeah.
Then you have to worry about rent.
Yeah. But I do. So I still have to worry about room. You know, even with warehouses. But we would warehouse all our stuff there. And now that we're doing it in another place, and everything's digital, obviously, now, so it's more condensed.
So you don't pull out any of the old stuff for the new shows?
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
Some of the old, like, big stuff you'll
put
on a
truck? There's a drum set that when we were out with ZZ Top that is just fantastic. The cymbal holders.
Like a kit or actual things that are...
No, the drum kit. He did the kit and you know, all the stands and stuff. Because Frank from ZZ was always had these, you know, killer drums, like weird, crazy stuff with skulls and any theme that they used. So we had the guy build their stuff, do one for us. And it's massive barbed wire drum stands, you know, all meshed together. So
you still use that?
We can. And it had a real steer head that went in front of the kick drum. And, of course, it blew smoke out of its nose.
Of course.
I mean,
it'd have been a joke. And
that's George Strait conservative country music.
You'd have thrown.
I always told myself, what would George do? What would George do? He wouldn't do this.
But it sounds like you did the opposite. You're like, what would George do? And then we'll.
No. We listen to the Rolling Stones every now and then. We're going to do some crazy stuff.
Is that your favorite band? Is that one of your favorite bands, Rolling Stones?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Back from the day and still today. Yeah.
You ever see them?
Yeah. Yeah, we opened for them in Nebraska.
Dumb question if I ask you if you've ever seen them and then you've opened for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty dumb question, right?
Yeah,
pretty dumb, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get to spend any time with them?
Yes. Yeah.
Were they nice?
They were super nice. You know, but before the shows, you get all this stuff from, I'm sure, the crew and the protocol piece of, you know, whatever.
Don't look them in the eye type stuff?
Exactly. You know, and be careful. Just go to, you know, go to the Rattlesnake Lounge is what they had back then. And said, go in there and make yourself, you know, comfortable and don't make eye contact. Anyway.
They tell me with you.
Yeah. They come dancing in about 10 minutes before time for the show. And it was like, I mean, they were could not have been more kind and more hospitable. And took all the crew guys up and showed them all of Keith's guitars that were set up. And just rolled out the red carpet. I ended up with Mike Adams, my buddy Mick, with Mick Jagger's monitor guy for years. And I mean, you know, the world changed then. It's just like you see what kind of talent they get to deal with. It's like, you know, being in a pilot and you know, it's a little Piper Cub, and then you step into a F-16 or whatever they are now. Just crystal clear sound and stuff. I was spoiled, still I am.
Was meeting those guys, if I relate it to a young artist who's 22 and has listened to you guys and listened to you, and they're like, oh my God, were you like that with them, or are you not really jaded anymore because you kind of see what it's really all about?
Well, we've been around long enough to be you know, confident that what were we going to do was okay. And it wasn't a frightening thing, but it was just cool to us to get to meet them and do the show. Irving Azoff set it up.
Do you take pictures? If you're famous, do you ask another famous person for a picture? Or do you have somebody come in and go, let's get a picture of you guys
right
together?
Well, that's one thing that they said, dude, don't ask for pictures. So they may do it, they may not. But anyway, it was Mick that stepped up and said, hey, let's take a picture. So we all stand up and get this picture. It took, now this is no exaggeration, a minimum of 3 years to get it back. Clarence, our manager, knew Irving and was hooked up with all that bunch. And so 3 years later, the picture comes in, 8x10, and they're the same height as we are. I'm 6'4", Kicks is 6'2", right? Then we're all the same height. So I guess that's what was going on.
Took a lot longer to edit pictures then.
Little touch-up.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's funny that you're all the same height in the picture.
Yeah.
You still have the picture?
Yes, I do.
Where is it in your house?
It's in my nightstand right now.
Is that one of your favorite pictures professionally of your professional career?
It's up there. I think being, I found one the other day. In fact, online, it was Dale Earnhardt, Johnny Paycheck, Merle Haggard, me, and Kix. And it was talking about outlaws or something in music. Of course, Kix and I were outlaws, but those guys were like as iconic as I can imagine at the time in that world.
Did you guys, when you first started to blow up, or let's just say you had a hit or two, what kind of lane? Now, as kind of revisionist history, it feels like, hey, that's Brooks and Dunn. They're killing it. They're awesome. They got so many hits, and look at them go. And everybody loves them.
Yeah.
Was that at all what it was like?
Yeah. I mean, yes.
No pushback on those guys either aren't real country or those guys are too flashy.
Everybody gets that, you know, from the press and critics and all this. Yeah, heck yeah. I mean, there was a critic down in Dallas, I forget his name. I think everybody else has too. But he would go out of his way to really get under your skin.
With what purpose?
He was an asshole.
Was he a traditionalist? Like
I don't think he was. He claimed to be. If it served his purpose, you know. But like one night we were booked for Billy Bob's early on, and it's Cedar Fever down there. It just took my, it's to lose your voice. Just lost my voice. So I couldn't sing, but you have to show must go on, I did the best I can, and he just shredded me the next day.
Did he mention that you were sick or just that you couldn't sing?
No, he just mentioned, he said that he couldn't sing. He said it was no good, that kind of spirit. So, but he continued that, and I don't know, but he was notorious for that.
Still alive?
No, got hit by a bus.
Is this a joke? You need to tell me if it's a joke before.
Got hit by a bus on the way out of Billy Bob's that night.
You're not telling the truth.
No.
Okay. See, that's why I said, is this a joke? Because all of a sudden I started laughing. You're like, no, it's serious.
And we backed over the guy by accident.
My wife and I were driving a couple days ago. And let me add, before I give you the story about you, what do you consider, and you got to consider at least 5 years, prime years, of Brooks and Dunn on top of it?
Yeah.
What are those 5 to 7 years?
Just chaos and nothing but a blur. I can remember going to Sacramento and playing Arco Arena when it was relatively new and setting the record for attendance, above the team, basketball team, and things like that.
Like 96, 97, like what?
It would be like 95, 96, I would imagine. 96.
Up to about 2000 or so.
Yeah.
Did you feel, and before I get to her story, did you feel the music sonically changing, or were you two changing more?
Sonically, progressively with technology and all the things that are involved, on that end, my idea of it improving and changing has more to do with a sonic deal, it did, started in early 2000s, started changing to more of a pop,
Definitely a shine
flavor.
Yeah. She was singing, but you can't take the honky tonk out of, and she knew every word. And I said, what year is this? And she was like, well, it's in my wheelhouse, so probably 2000. She looked up 2003, I believe, is the year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, all right, that's later Brooks and Dunn. That's like, outside of the, because I never hear that song.
Well, speaking of sonics, our first record, which sold the most of any of them so far, 7-8 million CDs, but it was cut in Sony ATB, back then it was called Tree Publishing, in the basement, in the demo studio. Those were all cut as demos.
So you're saying not a lot of resources went into the biggest record you ever had?
We put $30,000+ into that entire album.
And that's interesting you bring that up, because when I heard, what's the name of that song? Because you can't take the, do you still play that, by the way?
Uh-huh. Can't take the honky tonk out of
that,
the girl.
That felt a little cleaner and a little shinier than some of the old stuff.
Yeah. Well, we may have changed studios, you know, at that time.
Do you like that song?
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, the crowds react to it. Love it. Yeah.
No, I didn't ask about the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, do you?
That has a lot to do with
it. I know, but we're talking about you, because you know I'm a massive fan.
Yeah. Well, I look back at it right now, and my wife is usually my voice on that. She'll go, you know, you don't need to be doing that now. You know, Connie came back from her second cousin's wedding. You know, can't take the honky tonk out of the girl. Anyway, and she'll go, you know, do you feel comfortable doing that now? You know, she says, Take it somewhere else. Try to grow or progress, you know. But what does that mean? I don't know. It's just music to me. I'm not trying to chase a trend. Radio had a lot to do with that, in whatever way. It always has. And where the labels would get involved, for the most part, on the corporate side and go, look, radio's not going to play this. Radio will play this, you know. But some of my favorite songs or better songs have been songs that probably wouldn't have been played on radio. But I think a lot of people say that. But then they're more esoteric.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, not as palatable
for the general public.
For people who aren't diehard Brooks and Dunn fans, right?
Yeah.
That's who you're trying to get. You're going to get your people regardless.
Yeah.
It's like, what can you create that's also going to reach out a little further, and hopefully people will get a taste.
Yep, and you can't criticize that. People do, and I've done my share of it. But now I realize, no, that's a business plan that works. You know.
Did you change schools a lot as a kid?
Change what?
Change schools.
Oh, 12 schools in 13 schools in 12 years.
What? That's right. You can't even really build a stable friend group.
No, you can't. You can't. Mm-mm. No, you're always a new kid. And all the way, I started on a reservation in Farmington, New Mexico. And I was the only Anglo kid there because we lived on an oil lease. My dad was in the pipeline.
Is that why you moved so much, because of your dad's job?
Yeah.
Is that a bit why you perform? Because this is like therapy type stuff.
Yeah.
But you move so much, you never really have stability within a friendship group. You never really have that closeness.
True.
So also you have to kind of be somebody new all the time. You have to perform for new friends quickly.
You go to one school and you'd be cool, different dress, different vibe, different personality of the school, you know, and you need to kind of learn to be became a chameleon at times.
Do you think that moving around a lot affected your desire to perform?
No, I never wanted to perform. I was good playing bass in the background, and my dad played guitar. His dream was to become a country singer, period. I mean, everything else was second nature.
Was he good?
Yeah, he was good enough. He was good enough.
Did he try?
He did try. Yeah, he had a radio show at a radio station in the 50s when I was born. In Abilene, Texas, it was called the band was called the Fox 4-7. I think it was KRBC.
And so he did a show and also had a band that performed on the show. How far did he get? Like, what was his?
Well, the big thing back then, there was a DJ out of Fort Worth in Dallas called Bill Mack, and he was kind of like name a big BJU in the day. It's like
Wolfman
Jack. Yeah, Bobby Bones.
No, not me. I'm not a DJ.
No. What are you? Well, you're more than that, but they're always more than that. Program directors, all that stuff.
Don't compare me to other. They're always. I'm not a DJ. I might play three songs in an hour and I don't even pick them. I perform wherever I am. I say things. I'm a personality.
Okay, I'll go with that.
You've offended me.
But you're not. You're definitely not limited to this dynamic in space. No, you're not. I see you like doing comedy. Out playing with the band, on all kinds of TV shows now.
Let's go back to your dad. So he's got a radio show, and he's also a singer in a band.
Yeah.
And so can he play his own music on that show?
Uh-huh.
So are they playing live?
Yeah, he would write. Yeah, they had to play live back then. So they've been doing all that crazy stuff.
So I'm assuming then he toured some, at least regionally, with the band?
He did, yes, when I was young. And then all that stuff, you know, he had to move with his job to keep, you know, family.
He was still doing oil and music.
Yeah, yeah. And still had to go with that, and then he had to feed his family. So,
do you think
they were getting transferred a lot. You know, the pipeline business is, in theory, you know.
Did he always hold on to the dream, even as he was doing oil?
Yes, yes. And I never, ever showed any real interest in pursuing music at all. I can remember my grandmother, his mother, like talking to me as a young kid. I never understood. I thought it was random. There was a guy next door who was in a band that they traveled all the time. She goes, oh, you don't ever want to be involved with that. You're gone all the time. There's so much downside of whatever it is. And just they would plant these little, you know, subtle, you know, subconscious seeds. And, you know, about that's just something you don't want to do. Well, my mother's parents lived a block away. So I'd go down there. And they were super religious. My grandfather was the big main deacon in the Emmanuel Baptist Church in Eldorado, Arkansas. And, you know, they would, their deal was, his big thing was, I was the oldest of 16 grandkids. He just goes, I want one of my grandsons, please, to be a minister. You know? And I think that's where I picked that up later on.
Just it sounds like you picked up both just at different times.
Yeah, yeah. And I was trying to, you know, you're young and you're impressionable and you absorb, you know, that stuff. So I went off to, you know, next thing you know, lo and behold, I go off to Abilene, Texas to like study, you know, Bible and the ministry.
What did your dad say about that?
He didn't say anything. He wasn't a church guy. he didn't say anything about that. It was just like, you know, to him, for us to even think about college was something that wasn't on the radar.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. Was your dad resentful at all that he'd never got a fair shot because he had to work in oil and he felt like he was good enough?
Like, I think so.
Like,
yes.
Like hurt a bit?
Yes, and that was one thing I was afraid of and I sensed. Yeah, he was extremely competitive, you know, for numerous reasons that we won't go into. But, yeah, it was that, and he died before. He died at the age of 62 before I really got a handle or a hold in professional music.
What'd your mom think about you going to be a pastor?
Hardin Simmons, Abilene Christian, all that. Yeah, she was all for it.
Is that because she thought it'd make you a good dude?
Yeah. It was just a better influence. You know, you're not getting out there in the real world. So when I told her, you know, I was always taught by her. I mean, she was very conservative. Couldn't dance, any of that kind of stuff. We couldn't go to the school, sock hops. Back then.
Was she Baptist? Did you say that?
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a Baptist church, and the other Baptist churches couldn't dance, but they never really told us not to, but I knew that was the Baptist thing.
That was like almost Methodist then.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So she never saw her dance?
No. Uh-uh. No, she felt like that if you danced, it led to sex, and that was evil.
I can tell you firsthand, it didn't. I can tell you.
I never got the chance to prove it.
Tell you firsthand.
Until later in life. Yeah. Yeah, so, you can make it work with a little tequila. I don't know.
You go to school, and what's it like your first day of going to school to spend the rest of your life preaching the Word of God?
I didn't know if I would be specifically a preacher. I thought, you know, I could be like a spiritual or a religious counselor or psychologist. And I learned real quick that the second that I had to step up and speak in front of a crowd, that wasn't for me. You know,
so you didn't even have the performance, like, bug whenever it was time to speak what you think you're going to do with the rest of your life?
No, you had to do it to get licensed. This is so weird. I didn't know this. I was too young to know this. To get licensed as a minister, you get licensed and then you get ordained. So if you're licensed, you have to go up and preach a sermon. So this pastor we had in South Texas, Port Isabel, had me go up and do a sermon, which was the biggest nightmare of my life.
Yeah, how'd it go? What do you remember about it?
Horrible, horrible. I remember thinking, 30 minutes, what? You know, no, I mean, it was awful. You know how it is, standing up as a comedian in front of people, period, and trying to hold that crowd.
Yeah.
What you have to do, it's the same concept, you know?
Do you remember what it was on?
No, I was random. I don't know. You know.
So you decide through experience that you don't want to do this.
No.
So then what do you do? Do you just quit, or do you have to call your folks? And
no,
be like,
no. I tried to like ink my way over a little bit. So I changed to psychology, and then I really got into that and enjoyed it, and did it for. But at the same time, I was involved with music. We would go out and play. VFWs.
Are you playing bass?
Yeah.
So you're not even singing in the band that you're in.
Well, I would sing a few songs. Yeah, but I got to where I was a good bass player and I could play by ear. That's another thing, because if you're going out with like pickup bands on the weekends, you kind of have to pretty much know how to wing it, because you're not going to know all those songs. So I could play by ear.
Were you comfortable performing as a singer?
Not at first. No, in fact, I wasn't comfortable performing as a singer, even with Brooks and Dunn. You know, well after Neon Moon came along, that's the first time that I like, they told me to hold a mic and just stand there and sing, or go to one side of the stage, go to the other, and without like shaking, and did that. So
you're playing bass, you're singing some,
yeah.
You're going to school,
yeah.
I mean, you didn't. You're not a preacher. You're not a Christian psychologist.
No, college was not for me. I hated it.
How far did you go?
7 hours from graduating. Abnormal psych and statistics.
You got that close?
Yeah. I was going to come home for the summer, work on the pipeline with my dad, and then go back and finish up. And I never finished up. I got involved with bands. They had moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma by then from South Texas. And I got involved with all these cool bands. Eric Clapton's band was there. Bonnie Raitt, J.J. Cale, Joe Cocker. Shelter Records was working out of there in L.A. at the same time. So, yeah.
So your guys are in Tulsa now. Uh-huh. Is that when Oklahoma comes into play for you?
Yeah.
At that stage of your life?
Yep.
So when I think of you, I just think of Oklahoma first and foremost. I don't know, I guess probably because that's all you and my wife talked about for 20 minutes before we even did this, and you wouldn't stop talking and acknowledge that I existed.
Special girl.
You move up to Oklahoma at age 22, 23?
Yeah. And I fell right in with these guys who were involved with Leon Russell. And one of them was an architect buddy. Steve Bush was his name.
Are you playing bass with these guys?
Not with them, no. But I was playing bass with local bands, a bunch of good local bands, and tons of places to play. You know, like here when we first moved to Nashville, there was no place to play. Now it's Broadway, it's rocking. So it was kind of that deal. People would club hop, you know, and go hear bands. But not many of those guys from that group were involved in country at all. But Tulsa had a big country scene, you know, Johnny Lee Wills and a bunch of other people.
So are you singing more? I'm trying to find whenever you started to realize you're actually better than most vocally. Mm. You know, are you singing more than you were, or are you still just singing a few, playing the bass on most?
I'll tell you the thing that really broke it. Urban Cowboy thing kicked off, like started, and we were hitting up to then like little regional clubs and just beer joints, really. But that's where else do you go if you want to be a football player? It's akin to you have to go to the gym. You have to play football in high school, junior high, and all that stuff, you know. So you go to these beer joints and you do it. There was a lady here, Mary John Wilkins, who had worked with Chris Christopherson that I had visited with at one point before it all started. Don't let me get you too far off track. But she called them Skull Orchards. She said, I love the way you sing. She says, you're going to have to go get some experience in these Skull Orchards. And I was like, what?
Just reps. She just wants you to go do reps and
play. That's not a pretty picture, right?
Yeah.
From day one. So anyway, I actually went to Oklahoma and did that. You know, I would call these places up and go book for, you know, $300 a night, $250 a night if they had it, and then play for the door in Texas now. At like I said, VFWs, we'd play for that and try to build the crowds up over a few weeks or month and two and whatever work, we'd stay there as long as we could. And it's just working out, playing.
Yeah, but even singing, you're training that muscle.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're singing four nights a week.
So I'm in Tulsa, and the Urban Cowboy Movement thing happens, and they start building this massive club called Duke's Country. Huge. It was a converted furniture factory. And, I mean, there's nothing for 3,000, 3,500 people a night to be there on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Thursdays. A guy from a steel player, of all things, from a Gate Mouth Browns band, who was a blues player, came to my door one day, and he said, I'm putting together a band. He said, would you be the lead singer for it, for a house band at Duke's? I'm like, no, yes. I guess, yes. So we put together a band and kept the job for two or three years, several years, which was a good run for club stuff.
Was that your first spot at being you're the lead singer. That was it.
Yeah.
Did you find you liked it more than you thought?
I loved it.
Did it make you think of your dad?
Always. I always do. Anytime. I mean, he's always, that's always the image and the motive back there that I think of. I just think it's like, how did I end up cosmically living my father's dream?
Do you think he would be proud looking at you now?
Yeah.
You think it's super cool?
Yeah, too cool. I'd have to lock him away. he was very opinionated, very country, very, very traditional country back to that, Hank Williams days and all that. And, Ernest Tubb and real way into that.
He take you to any concerts as a kid?
Yes.
Who'd you see? You remember your first ever concert?
Young Love, Sweet Love. Who was it? Sonny James. He played guitar with him for a little while. He would come and do pickup stuff with him. And yes, I remember going to a Sonny James concert. I was small. But that, yeah.
Did you ever see, and I don't know how old you were when your dad was taking you to concerts. Did you ever see, I don't know, he loved Hank Sr. That was probably way before you, though. I'm assuming when he was young, that's way before you. Anybody come through town and you can remember him being like, dang, I saw them before they actually turned into like the superstar that everybody knows?
Well, I did in Tulsa. Yeah, a lot. We opened for Ricky Skaggs when he just had his first song out, Lee Greenwood, when he just, that's where they would land in those size venues and then work their way up. But, you know, Johnny Lee coming out of Urban Cowboy movie, of course, that was a big thing at the time. Yeah.
You're singing.
Rodney Crowell.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, love Rodney.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. You're singing in Tulsa, you're regionally playing, but when do you go, I got to go to Nashville? Or did someone say, you got to go to Nashville?
My wife, Janine, she just said, you know, for you to make this happen, you're going to have to jump out of the plane, man. He says, you're going to get off.
Did you not want to jump out of the plane?
I was afraid. You know, Nashville scared me to death. You know, it's a feast or famine environment. You know, there's no middle ground here. And I did not want to be getting involved in the dark side.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. You pack up, you throw in a car, you get a trailer. Like what's the
okay?
Move?
So Janine, had been widowed for 5 years, and a friend introduced us, and she and her ex-husband, or not ex-husband, but past husband, what do you call it? Help me.
Did he die?
Yeah, he died.
Late.
That's late. Good. Thank you. With that too. I just said dead.
Hell no. Yeah. Anyway, she was come to find out, didn't know it going in, that she was friends with June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash, that they were best friends. Well, her late husband, had made the car One Piece at a Time that John sang about, okay? So she goes, I'm going to take you to Nashville. And she said, that's not somewhere you're going to be able to do it. And introduce you to John and June. She said, let's go up there as friends. We're not going to say much of anything, except that Eric Clapton's drummer, backing up a step here, Eric Clapton's drummer, Jamie Oldacre, as a joke one night, had entered my name in the Marlboro Talent Roundup contest. Okay, so you have to submit a tape. You know, they get it, they call it back. So he says, I was at a convenience store one night. I said, I ripped one of the, like, entrance forms up and sent it in to him. And I'm like, oh, dude, this is so uncool. We thought we were cool, even at that level. We were playing beer joints and starving to death. So he goes, I did it. We're going. Anyway, so sure enough, we get into the regional part of the contest. Then you go to whatever the next event, and it's bands, 5,500 bands all over the country. And then you end up here in Nashville doing the final for that, and we won it. And I remember Ricky Skaggs was a guest, a judge. I can't remember who else was.
You won it.
We won it, yeah. And then you get like $33,000 and a recording session with Barry Beckett at the time and Scott Hendricks. And we cut Boot Scoot and Neon Moon and one more, Hole Up in Some Honky Tonk by Dean Dillon.
Who is we?
The band. I had a band.
Right.
I'm sorry.
What's the name of the band?
They eventually became the Tractors.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just Bonnie Raitt's piano player. I got Clapton's drummer. We're all like,
that's
come
crazy.
On. We're in a band. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
So you took that band originally cut a couple of those songs.
Uh huh. But they weren't that band at the time. They were just guys around
your
town.
Band.
Yeah,
your
we just put them together. Yeah.
Wow. So you make that record on $33,000, basically.
Yeah.
Three or four songs. That's not a record, but songs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you do with it though?
What do we do?
Yeah. What do you do with the record? Do you sell it at shows?
No. I mean, we thought okay. Well, at least we get a good foothold in getting to do some stuff around it, and we did. Marlboro put us on tour, a military tour, which was actually a blast. It was massive stages. George Strait, golly, Ricky Skaggs, Alan Jackson, I mean, everybody. I mean, we got to open the shows for all those people. And we thought, well, this is the beginning of it. We'll get a record deal, and away we go. Well, that ended, and then, 3 years later, I'm out weed eating, the fence at the farm.
So
what the hell am I doing here? I thought this was my way into it. Same principle that works with the other shows that we watch today, The Voice. That's not the ticket to the big time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a ticket to get a little flash so maybe people can pay attention to you so then you can start. That's what I tell them. Like, use this platform to get a good place to start.
Yeah, you're not on your way. Not
hopefully
my long
you can
shot.
Make a few contacts and relationships through your little flash
yeah.
that you can get enough of a foothold.
Yeah. And that said, I did. Scott Hendricks took the tape to Tim Dubois, who was starting Arista Records at the time, and still trying to fill in a balanced roster. And Clive Davis was behind it, of course, and that never hurts. At a time in the business when it was not a great time to start a label, but tell Clive Davis that, right? So Tim comes out and hears me in Tulsa because he's from Grove, Oklahoma. Caitlin.
I don't know where Grove is. They had like a moment where they're like, Grove. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
On Grand Lake. Anyway, he hears us play and he goes, okay, after we get through, he takes me back and he goes, okay, I'm going to tell you this. He says, hold tight for me. He says, just like I'm going somewhere, right?
back to weed eat.
Yeah, he goes, hold, yeah, right. I got the other side of the fence to weed eat. And he says, I'm putting the record label together. I got Alan Jackson and Pam Tillis, Diamond Rio. And he said, I'm up to something here. So he says, if you'll just have a little faith and patience in me, I'm going to go there. So, you know, a year later, I hadn't heard anything from him.
A year?
Yeah.
That's a lot of patience.
Yeah. Well, where else do you go? I don't have a choice, you know. Sure enough, Janine comes down one day and tells me to put the weed eater down, come up to the house, get on the phone. She says, call Tim DuBois and see what's going on. Because I'm shy. I wouldn't do that, you know. And she's not. I call Tim, and he goes, mister, I said, this is unreal. I said, I'm sitting here with my Rolodex right now looking for your number. And I went, no, you're not. And he goes, yes, I am. He goes, I want to cut Boots Scoot Boogie. I'm thinking, The Flash, me, with me? He goes, with Asleep at the Wheel. So I just signed him. I said, okay, great, you know, knock it out. And he said, come down to Nashville. He says, I'm going to, you know, talk to you when we get through and listen to the record. So I went with Janine and I got in the car, drove to Nashville, and it was he played it for us, and it's Asleep at the Wheel did it, of course, as a swing song.
Yeah, very Texas swing.
Yeah, da-da-ba-ba-ba-da-da-da-da-da. And we both just went, Janine and I were like, oh, no, it's not going to work, not going to fly. And so they ran through their cycle there, and then finally Tim said, okay, it's time to move here. You know, this is a year later, year after that. He said, time to move here. He said, and I'll get you hooked up as a writer at one of the publishing companies. And he just called out of the blue one day after June Carter had already called Janine and said, she called her Whitter Patch. That was Janine's married name. She said, Whitter, would you mind, you and Ronnie maybe staying at, having rented one of the cabins up on the mountain, which was outside town in Goodlettsville. And Janine just started crying. She was like, oh, my God, yes. Please, I'll be close to June, who's a friend of hers and all this. So we did. Tim put Kix and I together to write with another writer in town, Don Cook.
Don't jump ahead. Hold on.
Okay.
Did you ever go meet Johnny Cash?
Yes.
You drove?
Yes. She brought me in to meet him.
Where?
To his house.
Okay.
In Hendersonville.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm scared to death.
Okay,
I don't want to meet them. And I know they're thinking, hey, you know, she's bringing, you know, a wannabe singer into my house. It's just like what I would do with one of my daughters. Just like, oh, please, right? So June takes her out. And June had just, John had just given June a blue-on-blue Rolls Royce for her birthday. You know, so we roll up to their house and all this ostentatious stuff is outside. And go in.
Nervous?
Yes. Yeah,
more nervous as you walk closer?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And it gets worse. So the girls, after day one, you know, we all stop and eat and all this stuff. And John's real quiet. He's quiet at first, you know, and he's intimidating anyway, right? And then under those circumstances, I'm going, you know, I don't want to be here like this. So the next day, June and Janine go shopping and leave me and John alone at the house. Well, there were two big black recliners in front of this TV, like that on the wall. And he's sitting there watching CNN. And I just sat down with a cup of coffee, and I sat there. I said, something going on in the news? And he goes, yeah, I always watch it. I always watch it. He says, I'm an addict. And he says, I'll watch the TV until the loop changes. He says, you know that CNN and all that stuff are on loops. And I'm like, no. And he goes, I just watch it to, you know, to loops and whatever, you know. And that was kind of the only thing I remember. He just kind of didn't say much. He's like, you want to go fishing? What are you doing? You want to be in music? Nothing like that. So Janine gets back, and she's kind of pale. She's kind of like down. And that's not like her because she's a chatter. And finally we went back to the bedroom, and she I said, how'd it go? And she goes, well, June just gave, she read me the right act. You know, she goes, look, you know, because Rodney and Roseanne had been married, and the girls, Carlene and all of them. And June had her struggles with John, too. And she said, it's not a pretty business. She goes, you know, these boys, she says, they're going to act up on you. You know, they're going to get out there and, you know, theoretically do whatever. And she says, you know, It's just not, it's not a good life, even if he does make it. She said the chances are, you know, 1 in 100 million that they, that even if they make it, will they last? She says, you don't want that life. You don't have to have that life. So Janine said, that's just kind of bummed me out. And I said, well, okay, let's go. But we didn't. We stayed and had a good time. But that was just kind of what we were left with there. But at the same time, June was kind enough to do whatever they could to help, and they did. And half the time, more than half the time, I would go up to take the rent or pay the rent, $600 or something like that. This house looked like something.
To Johnny's house? You would take the rent to Johnny Cash's house?
Yes.
And just drop it? Did you have like a hole for the mail?
They wouldn't take it. No, June, I'd say, June, I'm going to run over and leave the rent. And she goes, honey, don't do that. She said, don't do that yet. There's no need for you to do that. We're not worried about that. Anyway, so they wouldn't take it.
Did they ever take your rent?
No.
How long did you live there?
A year and a half, 2 years. No, 2 years.
Did you ever get closer to Johnny?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, Johnny would come up. There was another. It's a little enclave of cabins in Goodlettsville on top of a hill that they had built. Real cool. And he would come up and stay and spend the weekends and stuff sometimes up there just to be alone. And he'd stop at the house. And I told him, right, okay, I get a record deal with Arista.
As a solo artist?
I'm thinking as a solo artist. And I'm still writing. And Tim says, one day he goes, come over here. He says, we're going to spend the day, and I'm going to take you to every publishing company in town. And I had written, like I said, Neon Moon, Boots Coot, Hardworking Man, She Used to Be On, that kind of stuff. No one acted super excited. And he goes, but I'm waiting to take you to Sony ATV, to Donna Healey. And he said, that's where I want you. He said, that's in his period, the best place in town. So, sure enough, she calls one day and says, hey, I'm going to give you a deal. She said, how does, like, you know, $1,200 a month sound? I was like, whew, I'll take it now. And I was set up as a writer in a great spot. And Tim put me and Tim Kicks together. And I'm thinking, and you've heard this story, but or a lot of people have, but Kicks is thinking, well, he's writing songs with me for my solo deal. Unbeknownst to me, he had been working on another duo deal at Arista.
For him?
Yes.
Him and someone else?
Yes. Tim Nichols was who the first one was. And I heard that had I not worked out, it was going to be Leroy Parnell.
Wow, that's funny.
How about it? Huh?
They were shopping Kicks to a lot of really great. So it was like Kicks, you're half of something great.
You're going to be.
Like, yeah, like,
yeah, you're going to be, buddy. You know, I don't.
Did he want to be in a duo?
Because
it sounds like he had three duos all lined up for him to check out.
You know, I don't know. You have to ask Kicks. I don't know. But he'll tell the same story. He said, man, I thought, you know, he was writing for me and I'm writing for him. So Tim comes in one day and he has everything in his office lined up and plays all of our music together, you know. And he goes, I think with the first song that we had written together was a Brand New Man, and Working on My Next Broken Heart, and what else?
But you wrote that in a day or in a week?
Like a couple of days
together. But you stayed together to write for a couple of days.
Yeah, I'd never co-written before, so I didn't know, you know, what the protocol was. And we did that, put the records together, and did, you know, some work on them individually ourselves.
Was there a creative chemistry that you felt then, or was it? Did you just sound good, or did you compliment each other in a way that you hadn't before?
It felt good. I liked what he had brought to the table. It was Lost and Found, and a couple of songs that were like almost Eagles progressive, you know. And I liked that kind of. I was really, you know, in my creative Zen place, thinking if we were going to market ourselves as kind of a southwestern, east, west of the Mississippi, you know, desert kind of, then that's Southwest deal.
Did you guys, and we'll just smash forward just a little bit, but did you guys ever have other names for the group?
Oh, yeah.
Except for Brooks and Dunn?
Yeah, we sat for a day. It was going to be the Coyote Brothers, you know, the Cactus Brothers. We don't know. We sat and filled up notebooks, and finally it just, you know, I left town and came back after a weekend. Everybody said, let's just call it Brooks and Dunn. You know,
they were just exhausted of all the desert references. So
nothing felt right, you know. Rattlesnake, Twins, I don't know.
How does it, because you're both singers, yeah, and I've been to more than a few shows of you guys, and Kix sings awesome too, and Kix has...
He has style.
Yes.
Yeah, he has style. How
was that, his name's first, so then you get to sing more songs? Or mm-hmm. Like, how does that go when you're both good?
Here's how the name thing worked out, and people go, how did that happen? It's like his brother-in-law owned a big ad company up in Maine. We wanted a logo bad, so we kind of laid out the basics, and he came back with the Brooks and Dunn because it laid out graphically better there.
So stylistically,
it could have been done in Brooks, but Brooks and Dunn, by now it just seems natural. You know, the Beatles, right? What a freaky name! Really, who would you call yourself?
Yeah, it's just how successful you are. That's how normal the name gets.
Yeah.
When did it get the most absurd to you? But you guys were also in your 30s, right, when it started?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that helped at all with a little bit of the absurdity of how crazy it got.
It did. And a lot of the challenges we would have had, you know, you kind of helps you, like, fight through the unspoken ego tension that goes along with anything. You're trying to establish your turf. Are you going to be the lead singer, or am I going to be the lead singer? Hey, we're good to throw it together. We always have. It's just kind of – and I think being older helped deal with that. Yeah.
When you're doing these shows and they're selling out and you guys are all crossing over even a bit into not just country music, but you got so big.
Yeah.
Like at its most absurd time, can you look back and appreciate it, or was it all such a blur?
No, we can look back and appreciate it. You know? No. No, you appreciate what you have and just from seeing, I mean, other acts come along. You know, countless acts come along. It's like, here's the hottest thing in town. These guys are going to be monsters and all that stuff. And just like, boom, boom, gone. It's like, why are we not boom, boom, gone? Well, I don't know. That's unspoken.
Yeah, did you ever have what they call, Mike, what is it called?
Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, imposter syndrome, where you felt like, you know what, we're not as good as some of these guys, yet we continue to climb places that they're not. Like, we don't really deserve to be here. Did you ever feel like that?
Yes. Yeah. Sincerely. Yeah.
Why do you think that? What do you think the element was about you two? What do you think it was?
I don't know. I don't know. We thought about it a million times. I say me and Kix. I mean, we've talked about it. I don't know. I don't know if, you know. I mean, I do sometimes. I said, I'll lay in bed by myself and just go, it's just, I mean, was it because we were involved with Clive Davis and Tim? I've asked Tim Dubois. I said, what made this thing work? And he goes, Mister, I don't have a clue.
What about the songs, right? Do you ever just fall back and go?
Yeah, I think, yes.
Just could be the songs.
Well, they say it starts there, so it could be just what those songs were, you know.
And there's obviously other things that go into the stew, but if the songs are your meat.
That's it. It's the foundation of it all. That's you know, bar none. That's where it starts.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Stu's Place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Why put out, yeah, I think this is your fifth solo record you just put out. And I asked this in a complimentary way, but why? Why do you do solo records?
Because
now?
Now I'm like a cat out of the cage because we don't want a label deal and we're free from that. And we don't have to sit in a boardroom and we're not subject to a corporate agenda and schedule.
Do you have fun doing it, writing?
Yeah, because it's like you shoot your 10 songs, you know, or 11, 15, whatever, for a corporate thing with a label. And now streaming helps that a lot. But right now I'm just at a point to where it's like the money's not an issue, but I still have that hunger and desire to create music. I just love doing it.
Did you ever lose it? Did you ever get burnt out and you didn't want to write?
No. No, and I'll tell you what helped, that quitting helped. That was a big deal. You know, that you get on a conveyor belt.
Quitting what? The band?
Yeah, quitting.
How long did you quit? How long do you think you quit?
I thought it's been like 10 years, and it seemed like five, but you kind of burn out, but it's like we were at a place to where there's another thing in this business. That's called, it's the old thing, because you live by the awards, you die by the award shows. And we had won what do over and other things for years. And I just kind of felt it waning. And it's like the psychological impact of sitting in that audience and not winning. I said, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm not going to build a brand and get it up this high and this tight and let it be brought down.
So
by that piece of trivia, which is the same. Going up, it's a big important thing. Coming down, it's a big important thing too. And it's like I was not going to let it bring us down. So
the fact that you won all the awards made it hurt worse when then you started to not win the awards because people looked at like, hey, what happened? What happened to you guys? You used to win them all,
right? Now, yeah, well, and it got to a point to where the perception, was, hey, you know, you're slipping or whatever. But I used to be embarrassed. For the last few years, every time they'd mention our name, I'm going, no, it's working against us. You know, now it's like you're the Dallas Cowboys or whatever, and you've won the Super Bowl 20 times in a row. People, no matter how much they might like you or how well you're playing, they're rooting for you to get beat.
Yeah, this culture loves to build you up and then rip you down.
Yeah.
And then watch you climb back up again and then rip you down once you
lucky,
get too high.
Right?
Yeah.
So round two, no, we don't. I don't even go to award shows. I mean, now it's like they're nominating us now, but I just think
I saw you got nominated again.
Yeah, but it's like, mm-mm.
Do you want me to go in your place? And then if you win, I'll go up and do the speech.
Do it, please. Please. You'll do a lot better speech than I can.
You know how awesome that would be?
I want you to do it.
Because I'm
telling you right now, please do it if it happened.
So now I have to go sit in the stand. Yeah. But this is
don't go buy your suit now.
This is you officially saying though that if I go and I don't because I have a beef with them not letting me host. Right? That's a whole different argument.
Well, that's corporate stuff.
Yes,
I know what that's about.
So I've purposely just not gone the last couple of years. However, you're telling me if you guys win, you clear it now. I gotta have Texas clearance
absolutely.
Too. That I can go up and accept your award.
Please, yes, absolutely. Fact.
What about? Okay, listen to this.
Let's write this down.
Yeah. Write it down.
I'm writing.
We gotta get kicks on the phone too. Eventually, at some point, to agree.
I'm wholeheartedly mean this.
When they do the camera and they show all the people sitting in the audience, I want to hold two sticks with your heads on it, and they have to put it on me holding the sticks at your heads. But you have to say that so they know. We should. It'll be awesome. And then when you win, I'll go up and.
I'm all about it. I am all about it,
Mike. Mark this clip.
Marking it.
Write it. Yeah. Write it down. Post it.
I mean, I got to go.
Give it to
now.
The world.
I got to go to the award show.
There you go.
When you win, and I'll give the greatest, most eloquent speech as to why it sucks I didn't get to host. Because you know I make that. You know I make it all about me.
As far as I'm concerned, it can be all about you, baby. I don't care. Just do it. Yeah, no. I mean that. That's actually a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I don't think we may not do that. I gotta get clearance of my wife on this one.
No, he'd go for it. He's totally into that. That would be awesome.
Just a couple more things. You've mentioned your wife a few times in a very loving way, and also someone, it seems like, you just value her opinion on things personally and professionally.
Yeah.
Has she just consistently been a pillar in both?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've come to bed, like, you know, after listening to a song or two or something and, like, feeling, you know, an inch tall, you know. And invariably, most of the time, she's right, and she's also that, you know, that mountain that if I feel like I can stand up to it and buck it and break through it and come through with a successful song, then, hey, it makes me feel better about me.
Does she challenge you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, mine too, but in an awesome way.
Yeah, no,
like in a way that I've never been challenged.
No,
before.
I hated it at the time. You know, I hated it at the time, and then I look back at it and go, you know, who else is? Do you want somebody around that's just telling you you're great all the time?
Sometimes,
or you know, yeah, well, yeah,
yeah, occasionally,
most times. Yeah, well,
you know what she says?
As artists, we're all insecure.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife says to me, everywhere you go, people tell you how great you are. Right. But I'm just going to be honest, and at first, that was really uncomfortable for me. But yeah, I've never been challenged in a wonderful way like my wife has challenged me. Where she said before, like, that joke wasn't that funny that you told. And I'm like, but everybody laughed. And she goes, but you're better than this.
Yep, that's Janine Dunn. No, that's a gift. If you have a partner like that, that's a gift.
Do you get when that first happened, did you get offended? Because I did. I was like, you don't know anything. You never told a joke.
Right.
But then after a few times where she was absolutely right, I'm just like,
no,
that hurts, but I trust you.
Absolutely. No, that's a good partner right there. You know? And you learn over time whether you respect it at the time or not, that, you know, if they're right enough, and they're always right, that you know, you're pretty much, you're hooked up with the right person.
Yeah, it was tough for me at first, as far as,
especially
I'd be like, what do you know about comedy? And she was like, I'm not trying to give you a lesson in comedy, but I can tell. And then she would start to punch up jokes better than I could write them too. I'd sit in the bed and I'd be like, uh-huh, what about this? She goes, what if you move that word to here? And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
And I would get mad that she was better than me at it.
Well, Janine does the same thing. She would do it and like end up with like her name on a song. And then the next thing I know, she's like, well, I'm at a business meeting with the accountant thing. She goes, oh yeah, there's Janine's songwriting business account, or gift account, she calls it. I go, how much money's in it? What? You know, you walk through the room. You were mopping the floor while I was writing a song. No, it gets brutal, but it's fun.
Yeah, and you know? It has made me better.
Yeah, it has me too, yeah, by far. There's no way, no denying it. As crazy and as volatile as it gets.
And when my wife tells me I do something good, I believe her. Uh-huh. Because she doesn't pass those compliments out, which is good for me too. Because
same with Janine. She is not. She's not gonna go that way. You know. Yet she's. You know. She's sweet. She's kind. She's sensitive. She's, you know, more so than I am. And it's, you know, but normally I don't respect that. You know?
Yeah.
Because we're in this business. We're used to the fight. You know. But I do with her.
What's your favorite accolade that you've ever received? We were debating on what your answer would be, and I just don't want to ask this so you can be like bragging. Mm-hmm. But we were going through some of your stuff, and we did a whole preview before you came out talking about your record and stuff. Yeah. If I said the greatest professional accolade / achievement, what is it?
Oh,
it's tough.
Ugh.
I picked one. Mike picked. We all picked what we thought you would say.
I've never thought about it, and I'm bad at doing this too. I don't. You know. I don't know. I don't know. You know. Would it be something as trivial as, you know, vocal performance for a Grammy or something? But no.
Mike said it'd be a Grammy.
Yeah,
I said it would be Songwriter Hall of Fame.
That's it.
Which one?
Songwriter. No. You know what? Okay.
Country Music Hall of Fame was also in there.
No, your Country Music Hall of Fame. Like I never even thought about it. Never even.
Rank those three though. Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Number one. Go ahead. It's two. Songwriter or Grammy?
Ooh.
Thinking Grammy.
I think
I'll go to the Grammy with you.
Grammy.
I'll go to the Grammy.
You said that first. Okay.
Yeah.
I was at my stepdad came to town and we took him to go to the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, it was like every piece of metal they had ever put inside, and it's just your name all over every one of them. It just filled up a whole room of all those things, of CMAs and ACMs. And I mean, do they have to send a dump truck over to haul those things out?
Not a dump truck.
18-wheeler. Yeah. You guys are playing Stagecoach. I kind of want to end on this because what's cool is you were cool. You went away. It's rare that you get to be cool again. Not nostalgic. Different. You guys are cool again. And also there's the nostalgia. But it's not all based on nostalgia. Mm. You're cool again. Do you know that? And you understand that, right? Because you're playing Stagecoach and they just don't throw up good acts from the 90s to 2000s and stage at Stagecoach.
You know, I don't think about that much. Someone told me the other day that we played the first Stagecoach. Was that 06?
You're asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
I know. Someone in our camp said that. Is that right? Yeah. The music sounds, it's the same, a lot of it, but the band is different out there. I mean, we're hitting like 30,000, you know, people, not festivals, crowds.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, people aren't coming
it's
to
crazy.
just go, oh, I remember these guys.
No, it's not a nostalgia.
And it's also young people are coming to
yes,
the shows.
Yes,
like so many of my friends that I did a show and I'd invited you to come out and you couldn't do it because you had a show. Even Caitlin was like, I want to go watch Ronnie instead of your. We had that because you were playing the same night in Nashville. She's like, do you care if I go watch Ronnie? But so many of my friends were sending videos from your show. And they're 30s and 40s, and they weren't going for any other reason other than they just love you guys' music. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I don't know. What's to be cool again twice, that is lightning in a bottle. The first time, but the second time, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, do you guys talk about that?
We do. We do, and it's once again, it's always with wonder, and we don't get it. But you know, so many things they do change, and I don't know. I'm this is weird just for me to say, but I feel like I'm singing better. Kix is singing great. The band is fabulous. I mean, this band is
very tight.
Crazy.
Is it the guys with Reba? You guys shared a band with Reba.
Yeah.
Well, we
spent, you know, off and on 7 years in Vegas and stuff. And yeah, it's part of her band and our guys. But it's just completely different. Technology is different. Lighting is different. All that. But at the same time, there's a new energy that's not coming from us. Well, it is, but it's coming from the crowd. The show's always in the crowd.
We asked people if they had questions. I'm going to roll through five of these quick. You answer them quick. Oh. These are from our listeners here. Some of these are simple. Like, what is your favorite Brooks and Dunn song?
My favorite. I don't know. I guess Neon Moon kind of had a resurgence there. They come and go. You know, you hear this whole thing. Like, they're like my kids. You know, I don't know. I'm fickle. You know,
it's. Right now, which song would you look forward to on the set list the most? Let's ask it like that.
What would it be? You got all the shows. You have to.
I'd say Neon. Neon.
Yeah, when you hit that first chord on Neon, it's just they light up.
Here's one. Something simple. How's he doing? How you doing?
How am I doing?
Yeah,
I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing. That's a bad answer to saying psychology. You don't say fine.
Do you feel good?
Yeah, I feel good.
Mental health good?
Never should be. You know, you should always be like a little bit of tension in life as an artist and tortured.
Favorite person or people to tour with?
Okay, now, years ago, like we hooked up with ZZ Top. Now, I'm going to say this, and I got to know Billy Gibbons and Dusty Frank, all that, man, they became like really good friends. Really cool guys. Really cool. Because they're like, the first car I got had like a killer sound system in it. It was an old, you know, Chevy Nova or something. But I had Tres Hombres. Just God, never heard anything like that. You know, Merle Haggard. Always going to go back to Haggard. I get around Haggard and but just couldn't talk. Now I wanted to like ask him so many questions and talk and shoot the breeze. And it's like
me and you. Can't talk. I'm just like,
we're chatting.
You're the coolest. I can't talk.
Yeah.
Sometimes I spit all over myself when you're you're like, what's up? Are you drool? I'm like, no, I'm just here with you. Okay, so a couple things, and we're going to wrap up on this. 100 Proof Neon. You guys definitely check it out. I saw the sign, the billboard, driving down the street. It looks you up there.
What'd that cost us, Braden?
Yeah, what did that cost?
Don't tell me.
Also, the Lensman Project, which you and I have talked about before, but you're really gifted photography in the eye. And, you know, we've been lucky enough to, I mean, you took some nude pictures of me once, and we...
Well, you had chaps on.
That's true. At Lensman.
And that little horse court.
And you can read out and see all about it. Caitlin, do you have any questions? You want to ask one question or no? You've been here. She's never come to a single one of these, Ronnie.
Come on, Caitlin.
Never. I don't have a question.
But she thought the number one athlete would be playing at our wedding.
Well, he meant like professionally. That was a friendship deal. Yeah.
No, your favorite part was the vowels. Yeah.
That's great to hear. Hey, and it was your people that came up with the moon that dropped out of the sky. It's like, that's cheating. But
we asked for like a 20-foot steer head that had a mirror ball on it, but they were like, we can't find one anywhere.
There's that. I was terrified. Someone was going to ask me to come out and dance or something. I'd say, get out of here. But you know what? My favorite picture of you, not that I look, is on your Instagram thing. Is you hanging out the window of the truck with the Sonic cup.
Yes.
My wife to this day, and all the girls, my niece runs all of our touring stuff, but they're all Oklahoma girls, and they walk around with a giant Sonic cup every day, all day.
It's our culture.
Yes. Ta-da.
Well, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Well, Siberia.
It's really cool to hear about your dad, honestly, and your wife.
Yeah.
Like to be able to kind of get into that a little, because you know, in a 20-minute interview, if we were to normally do that, I wouldn't kind of explore that area.
Well, we're always working a business agenda.
Yeah, but like, that's really, really cool. I appreciate you sharing that with me. Yeah. You guys follow at Ronnie Dunn on Instagram, at Lensman, obviously at Brooks and Dunn, and they just keep on killing it. And I'm gonna hit up Kix and be like, I need your consent too on this, Kix.
Yeah.
And if he says yes, I'm going to the show with your heads.
Oh, he's in.
And I'm gonna walk the red carpet. Speaking for you guys.
No, I'll have him on the phone by the time I get to the front door.
Okay. All right, Ronnie.
Dude, we're going in.
Thank you, buddy.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.